Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I'm your host, Eric Anthony, and for this episode, we once again had the chance and pleasure, as always, to sit down with my pal and all-around great dude, Mr. Ricky Lima, the Portuguese Prince himself. Ricky is currently working on his self-published comic, The Undergrowth, which I think issue 3 is what has been released thus far, if I'm not mistaken. I know I definitely read issue 3. If you want, go pick that up at your local comic book shop in Toronto. He's got copies. It's a beautiful book. As well, he's recently launched another successful Kickstarter for his book, The Millennium Bomb, which we get into all the details of that book on this episode. So without further ado, we welcome back my good pal, Ricky Lima. Enjoy the show. Welcome back, everybody. We are here coming live to you from the city of Toronto on this chilly February evening. And I have the pleasure of welcoming back to the show one of our favorite guests, a recurring guest. You're gonna enter that co-host level soon, because not everyone gets back on three times.
Hey, man.
So you're in fine company.
Who else is on that list? Shane.
You got Shane. You got Martin. You got Adam Chapman. Of course, my wife has been on it plenty of times. But in case of, if you haven't read the description and you're just a loyal fan who downloaded this episode without seeing who's on, it's the one and only Portuguese Prince, Ricky Lima. Right. Welcome back to the show, Ricky.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
This is very cozy where we're at.
It's intimate as hell.
We're literally at Dundas and I think it's Edward Street in a little cafe. Undisclosed. You have to find us or figure out where we were. But we can't talk too loud, I don't think. But you're gonna be my my leveler, right, my equal, yeah. My EQ guy, right?
Yeah. If we're making a scene, I'll let you know.
That's it. So how's it going, dude? I mean, we've been hanging out, having some good conversation over burgers. But tell the people what's new with you.
Man, I'm just like, I don't know, working and then coming home and working some more. Basically, like, my life is bookmaking right now, because, like, at work, like, that's what I do, is I make books. And I come home and I just work on more comics and work on books. So it's like, but the good thing is, like, I'm not bored of it. Like, I don't want
to. When you say making books, what does that entail? Give us the details.
Like my job?
Yeah.
Well, so, like, you know, the editorial department, they obviously pick the books and edit them, and then they'll give them to us, and then we put them together and make sure that they're ready for print, and then talk to printers and get schedules together. Just make the books happen, man. We take the books and make sure that they become a product, mm-hmm. You know?
So how does that help you then when you're making your own books? Yeah. Do you take all of the, obviously you take all that information and you're able to see this is what's working, this is what's not working.
Yeah, totally. Like, I'm able now to, like, I know, you know, like, what makes a good book in terms of, like, printing and everything and, like, putting it together, and I'm slowly picking up, like, design stuff too. Like, that's something I can definitely improve on, but, you know, because you're exposed to it all the time, so you can see, like, what you like and what you don't like in terms of book design or, like, how books are traditionally made. So that's pretty good. I pride myself that my books are pretty sweet, like, physically. When you hold them, you're like, yo, is a good book, you know.
So it's like, that grin on your face is hilarious.
Yeah, man, that's like what I want to do.
100%. No, I agree with you completely, because I think especially when you go to these comic book shows, these cons, and one of the coolest places to go is like the independent artist area, and there's such a plethora of books that are there, and everyone's got that idea, like, this is the one that's different, this is the one you've been looking for. Yeah. But the you know, sometimes you're paying the same amount of money for a self-made book that you would for a major publisher. Yeah. And you're like, I don't
know, it's gotta be good, you know,
and your stuff looks good. That's what I was getting at, like, Undergrowth. We just went to the Snail.
Yeah.
And we properly positioned where Undergrowth should be. Exactly. on that creator owned self-published. Yeah. And listen, I know you're here and I'm in front of your face, but the covers of those books and the way that they feel, like, they they feel legit.
Yeah. And that's like, that's the key, right? Like, when someone picks up the book, they want to feel like they're getting a good book, you know what I mean? And so it's important to make the book feel nice, like, when you have it, and then, like, look nice, so that when people buy it, you know, they're already hooked on it before they even start reading it, you know?
Yeah, I think
definitely think, especially in the hobby that we enjoy and that you create in, a lot of it has to do with that look. People collect stuff just so it looks nice on a shelf.
Yeah.
Right? So that presentation, I think, is half the battle.
Exactly. And too, like, making it, like, cost-effective, I think, is important. You ever, like, see a wicked book, and you're like, oh, I'm going to buy this, and then it's, like, $40, and you're like, really, it's, like, a 10-page book, and you're like, really, like, why is this book, like...
Well, there's some guys that I really want to support their product, in, like, the Toronto indie guys, and your book's $4, $5.
Yeah.
And the book that they got, it's the same book, same amount of pages, maybe even less, and it's a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I want to, but, you know, money's money.
Right, no, and it...
You don't want to be a dick, but...
Yeah, and it's not to say that, you know, like, I figured out a way to make more money selling it at less. Like, I'm definitely not making money. Like, I could charge more and make more money. But I had a friend once who explained it. It was like, the pricing of your book, there's two ways of thinking about it. One is to make money, and then one is to participate in the community. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so if you can price your book to participate in the community and have people actually read it, then I think that's more beneficial than making money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So as long as I'm not losing money on a book, I'm happy selling it at, like, you know, a dollar markup or whatever, right? So.
Yeah, that's good.
Because, like, if no one's reading your book, then who cares, you know?
Yeah, like, oh, his book looked good, but it was, like, he was obviously trying to make a lot of money off of it. Like, no one read it.
Yeah. And it sucks for me, because, like, I know the price of, like, printing and stuff for the most part.
Yeah, really, no.
So it's like I see a book, you know, it's like a photocopy, like, you know, 24-page book, and they're charging $10, and you're like, all right, man. Like, I know it's not going
to work out the way
I know
you
it's
going
to cost, you know, $9 for you. Like, relax there. You
know? Yeah. So. How has the response been to the book? You're three issues deep,
three issues,
right?
Man.
Released.
Yeah, it's a weird situation because, like, I'm releasing them, but at the same time I'm not, like, I don't want to, like, push it too hard because I want to, like, get an actual publisher behind it. So I don't want the publisher to be like, well, you've already tapped out your audience, like, we're not going to publish this book. So it's weird, you know? So, like, I'm, like, publishing the book and I'm selling it and stuff, but not as hard as probably I should. So it's like, I don't know if a lot of people... I guess a lot of people know about it, but I'm still trying to, like, not...
So you want to create a buzz so that someone picks it up and distributes it.
But at the same time, I don't want to, like... I want a publisher to be like, well, it's too big now, so you've already tapped out your sales, you know?
Yeah, that's weird.
So it's a tough situation, you know? And just, like, pitching is hard and scary, and I haven't done it. So it's, like, I'm, like, worried about it, but...
Do you have plans to?
Yeah, we have plans to, like, pitch it and stuff, but I haven't. Because I'm still writing the final issue, too, so I kind of want to finish that before I, like, focus on other stuff. Because I don't like working on multiple projects at the same time. It gets really kind of, like, I get bogged down, and I like to think about one thing for a long time and then move on to another thing and think about that for a long time.
How do you deal with that as, like, a creative person? Like, do you ever feel, or... Because we are always around creative people, right?
Yeah.
And you see sometimes, like, wow, they can really push something out. Like, ideas are just flowing out of them.
Yeah.
And if that's the way you're going to be successful, if you're doing it like that, then...
Yeah.
And for me, it's like, this. Do you ever sit on a story or an idea that's like, why is this taking so long? Maybe there's nothing there anymore.
Yeah,
how do you overcome? Do you feel that way? Or
I mean, so, like, Undergrowth, I mean, I started in... 2000, like, I think, like, summer of 2018, so it's been a while, right? Like, I've been working on it for a while, and it's definitely, like, you know, there'll be days where nothing's coming to you, or, you know, you just feel like you're wasting your time, but as long as you keep trying, it comes eventually. But a lot of people have, like, you'll see people who have a lot of ideas, but then never produce anything, and that's because they have a lot of ideas. They never know what to, like, focus on, you know what I mean? And that's not to say I don't have a lot of ideas, but I, like, want to focus on one idea and then move on. And you know.
So. How long does it take you, like, that turnover time to say, like, are you good with a deadline, or do you just say, listen, I can't force it?
It depends. Sometimes, like, if I'm really under the gun, I could probably do it under a deadline. But But I'm lucky as a writer that, like, I can get, like, 4 or 5 issues ahead of the artist, and then I really have to worry about deadlines at that point, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, so yeah, like, right now I'm working on issue 8, and the artist is working on issue 4, so I got, like, a pretty good, like, you know, leeway of just slacking off.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't have to force that, but then, yeah, like, I want to finish so that I can start, like, focusing on pitching it, you know what I mean? And focus on, like, that kind of aspect of it. So I do want to set myself a deadline. And also, too, then I got that book that I put on Kickstarter.
Yeah, Millennium Bomb.
Yeah. And so,
what is that? Explain that to us.
Oh, man.
Because that was kind of one of the things that was the impetus for this conversation again.
Well, so you know how I said, like, I like focusing on one thing at once?
Yeah.
Clearly doing 2 things at once at this point. But, so it started, like, Kickstarter does a Make 100 thing where you, like, make 100 of something. And I usually like to start the year doing, like, something, like, just doing something. So, like, a couple years ago I did a 24-hour comic jam. Huh? And that was pretty good. So this year I was like, I'm going to do something for this Kickstarter 100. And then I was like, I don't know. I didn't really want to just make 100 books because, like, whatever. Like, that's pretty easy. So then I started, like, challenging myself to think of what I could do. So I was like, I'll make 100 comic pages, and then that would be the book. And then, you know, I'm not limited to making 100 of those books because I made 100 pages that is the book. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So then it just kept, like, snowballing, and I was
When you said 100 books, I'm like, you're going to come up with 100 books in a year? Like, what?
Like, print 100.
Print, okay, gotcha.
But, so then it just kept snowballing. Like, I was like, all right, well, I'll draw it myself. All right, and then I was like, okay, well, I'll...
So you're drawing yourself.
Yeah. Have you seen the stuff I've been drawing, though, right?
Yeah. You've got, like, this budding artist inside. You want to prove to everyone I could draw, too.
No, but I'm just chasing everything. That's all I was just chasing. So I'm, like, taking classic paintings and just tracing them.
Okay.
So that's how that works. Like, it's literally, like, I have a TV set up, like, an old, like, LED monitor that's plugged in my computer. And then I put pictures on it, and I take the paper into the screen and just chase over it. So it's like, yeah, I mean, it's like...
So what is it going to be about? What's the Millennium Bomb? These 100 pages?
Well, you wait.
That's still...
No, it's okay. Right. So it's like about... The initial idea was, like, it's about these... So, like, because I'm tracing paintings, it's hard to have one consistent character because, like, you're tracing, like, you know, hundreds of paintings, right? So there's not going to be one character through the whole book. So I had to figure out a way to, like, make a story that didn't have a visual representation of one character. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Are you following along so far?
I'm following. Okay. I'm listening to this pitch.
So the book is about these immortal millennials that live in an art gallery that flies through a post-apocalyptic Earth. And
I like it.
Yeah. And then so the only they don't have any bodies, right? They are like these spirits, I guess. And so in order to communicate with each other, they have to inhabit the art that's in the art gallery that they're floating in. And then that's how they talk to each other. They, like, take the power from the art. And then every time they do that, it destroys that specific painting. So every time they, like, talk through a painting, it, like, destroys that painting. And then they have to go into a new one to, like, have conversation. But most of the time, they just talk about, like, random bullshit. So, like, they'll be talking about, like, their favorite Simpsons episode or something and stuff. So then as the story progresses, it's, like, then they start to, like, realize that, you know, they're almost, like, wasting their resources through just talking about, like, random bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
So then there's, like, a crisis where, you know, once the art disappears, then they disappear themselves. And then so then the story kind of goes from there. And then they have to figure out the solution to that.
So, I like it.
Yeah.
It's
that took a long time to come up with.
It's, I find that on the surface, the stuff that, the ideas that you have are, they seem... I like 2 robots fighting each other.
Yeah.
Like, I'm
yeah.
into kaiju fighting, so yeah. I wanted to do a mech battle book.
Yeah, yeah.
But there is a metaphor. There's a commentary that's subtle, but it's not...
There's definitely, like, I mean...
In your face.
You can't write a story without stuff going on. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can't just be about...
No. Well, some people, you know, it's save the Earth.
Yeah.
You know, like, the monsters are coming. We gotta... How are we gonna stop them?
But I like doing that, where it's like, you explain the story, and you're like, oh, yeah, yeah, whatever. It's pretty simple. But then when you read it, you're like, oh, okay, there's more to it. But it's like, it's stuff that is hard to explain until you, like, read it. You know what I mean? And that's, like, what I really like to do, is, like, you know, the stuff that's, like... You feel it, as opposed to you can just explain it. You know, does that make sense?
100%. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I get that. And that's kind of a cool way to put it, that you feel it instead of outrightly being told.
Yeah, exactly.
This is what you need to be thinking about right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But like when you read it, you like feel it, but it's hard to explain to people like what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I like to do.
So this one is a Millennium Bomb. Is what's the not subliminal message. But is it a...
Like, what do you feel?
is it more of the appreciation of what it is that we have, not to waste it? Because through the arts, we communicate with each other.
I mean, maybe. I haven't even, like, started writing it. It is all, like, really conceptual stuff, so I don't 100% know, like, what that's going to be. But I think it's going to be a commentary of, like, what it's like to live... as a millennial in today's society, you know what I mean? Where you're given so much, and then you just take advantage of it, and you just keep using it, and then eventually you have to sit back and be like, all right, well...
Take some pause.
Yeah, and be like, okay, what's going on here? So, and then, yeah, like, I don't want to spoil anything, because it's not even written, so I don't even know, like, if it's going to happen.
Go.
But the idea, I guess, is that because, like, their parents had built this art gallery and put them in that art gallery, so it's, like, to protect them from this bomb that went off that destroyed the world. And then so then throughout the thing, it's, like, them trying to find their own identity through all this, too. So then they kind of, like, create their own reality eventually.
So what was your impetus for it to be in an art gallery? Like, why?
Oh, because I was chasing art.
Okay, so that you
yeah,
wanted,
so I was like,
that was going to be like a visual template.
Yeah, yeah.
In order
like
for
a lot of
that.
The story is just a reaction to what I was doing. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like the story came out of the fact that I was chasing the paintings, and I was chasing the paintings because I can't draw. So it was like, it all kind of just comes out that way.
That's cool. I like
so
that.
So it's a weird way of making a story, but I mean, it's all about challenging yourself, right? Like, if you set limits to yourself, then you can come up with some pretty interesting stuff, you know, when you have to, like, find solutions.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's fun. I like that.
Yeah, I like picking the brain of a person who's creating something, because I think some people just have, it just kind of flooding out of them. Like, they can't stop it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then some people have that germ of an idea, and it's like, this part of it is important to me. And I want that's got to be there. But how do I get that to work?
Yeah, exactly, right? So I guess with this, the germ is, like, drawing those paintings. And then it's like, okay, how do you turn that into a story? And, like, you could just release a book of just you chasing paintings, like, whatever. But for me, I like to have, like, a narrative and, like...
That's really interesting.
I like books, you know? So,
yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
so
I have to
up with that idea.
That's a cool way of incorporating classic art and using, making it a narrative where there's a message or a story to be told.
But I guess I kind of cheat with, like, the millennials just talking about random stuff that doesn't have to do with the painting. Like, it's not like they're going to be commenting on the painting or anything. Like, they'll be talking about their favorite Simpsons episode. Wow, it's like a portrait of Jesus or something. So they're not necessarily connected in that way, but in the story it's kind of connected.
But I don't think you have to necessarily have a picture of Jesus and have them talking about Jesus.
I think
it's cool that there's this imagery of something that means so much to people and elicits a certain reaction, and we're talking about you're taking that cultural touchstone and putting another cultural touchstone in from The Simpsons.
Right, yeah, and it's like, you know,
I think that's cool.
It's definitely weird. People are gonna read it and be like, what the hell was that? That's good, you know?
But life is that.
Exactly, right?
Right.
So, you know, those are, like, my favorite kinds of stuff, where you read it and you're like, I don't get it, but it was cool anyways, you know? And then the old people who are, like, really smart be like, oh, this is what it means. And you're like, maybe, I don't know, I guess.
They find meaning in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think that's the point of art, right? Yeah. Is that... I heard a buzzing.
No, that was
okay, I thought it was something wrong. I'm like, okay. I think that's the point of art, right? Is that you put something together that was inspired by how you felt on a particular day and how you were looking at things, mm-hmm. and subconsciously even some of the things you didn't realize were you were putting into the painting.
Exactly.
Suddenly people say that's what it was.
Yeah. And it's cool because it's like a collaboration, right? Like you're putting stuff down and then you go to your audience, you're like, what do you think of that? You know what I mean? And so then your audience has to think about it and be like, oh, this is what I feel about that. And you're like, cool. You know, like, that's, all right, now let's talk about this. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, so.
What's the timeline for the book?
On the Kickstarter, I said I was going to deliver in August. We'll see if that happens.
100 pages.
Yeah.
How many pages?
But it's not going to be, like, 100 pages of me drawing, like, the paintings. Because, like, the way I envisioned it is, like, you know, some pages will just be words, and some pages will maybe just be, like, a scribble or something. So I'm not necessarily doing 100, like, tracings of paintings. So it's pretty good.
So you're cheating.
Yeah.
You're cheating. You're cheating the people.
That's why, like, in the Kickstarter, I, like, gave people an option to buy an original page. But I only set that at 50 because I knew, like, if more than 50 people came, I'm not drawing, like, 50 paintings. Like, screw that. You know what I mean? So, but I was lucky because only, like, I don't know, I think, like, 6 or 7 people bought those original paintings. So I'm okay with that. Like, the Kickstarter, I thought it'd do better than it did. Like, it was still successful. But I think a lot of people just didn't understand what was going on when the Kickstarter. Like, they saw it and was like, what the hell? So, yeah. So that one, I think it was successful just because, like, people know me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, like, because people are, like, into the idea so much.
I would support it because it's you.
See, there you go.
But it was... It did pique my interest
in
what is it that he's doing here.
Right, because but I don't think a lot of people are like that. A lot of people be like, I don't get it, I'm not going to support it. You know
yeah,
I mean?
No, so. Like, I always want to support the people who I like just as people, but then I'm like, there was also what also caught my attention was that you were including the audience, the people who are supporting it, like...
They can, like, give me lines
to the book, and... I remember you telling me on our first conversation that we had where you had an idea of getting people to throw things at you and you had to formulate.
Yeah, that was going to be another Kickstarter. I mean, I still would like to do that.
But I thought this was it.
No, that was it.
Okay.
Still going to do that. But that one would be cool. That's like where people suggest characters in the book and like create their own character to be in the book and stuff. But then you get kind of, like, it's weird because then if people don't like the way you represented that character that they made, then it's like, all right, you know?
Yeah, it gets tough. I wasted a character.
Yeah, exactly.
I could have used that character myself. And
or they're like, this guy wouldn't do that. And you're like, shut up.
right.
So, but I'm excited. I think the book's going to turn out good. And I wanted to do, like, everything myself. So, like, drawing it, writing it. I even made up my own font to go, like, in the book.
Oh, yeah, I saw that script. That was cool.
Yeah.
How did you come up with that?
I just, like, drew the letters on, like, a tablet in Illustrator.
Okay.
And you just put them in this, like, font-making program. And that's it, man. It's pretty easy.
That's cool.
I mean, it's easy to make, but hard to make it good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I were to give this to, like, a designer, they'd be like, this is trash. But for what I'm doing, it's fine. You know what I mean?
I think lettering in the comic books, once you read them enough, you can start to see people's styles.
Yeah, that's true.
And you know, and it does give off, as much as you don't think it does, there is a certain level of emotion that is evoked from how people lettered the book.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool that you came up with your own personalized thing. Like, this is what I'm using for Millennium Bomb.
Yeah.
That's the Millennium Bomb.
font. The font is called Millennium Bomb. So
that's cool.
It's sweet. I guess what I'm saying is, like, just technically as, like, a tool, mm-hmm. if you gave it a designer, they'd be like, this is terrible.
right,
on a technical level. But, yeah, no, I think it's cool. And, it kind of follows Millennium Bomb too, because I, like, not necessarily traced letters, but I used, like, I wrote out all the letters and then, like, drew on top of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So they're almost traced a little bit. but not quite.
You like tracing. Did you have tracing coloring books as a kid?
No.
I did.
The tracing code, what is that?
So what it was is that it was a coloring book, but in every couple of pages in between, there was like that... What's the paper called? Like the tissue paper type
tracing
of material?
Paper.
Tracing paper,
yeah.
Right? Where you would have it on top of like an image of,
that's
of
interesting.
Whatever character was in the thing. I had a Batman one. So it was like, oh, look, I can see. I drew Batman in my head.
That's
but I guess,
cool.
But I guess it's kind of giving you the practice of like, making the figure or seeing how it comes together.
Yeah.
So I used to love those because I couldn't
cool.
draw for crap.
So you
still
trace
can.
It?
Yeah, you trace it. And I'm like, look, I drew something. So it became like...
Now you know how I feel with this book, man.
But
you, good.
You've got a cool concept, though, because you're taking classic art
and
giving it like the Ricky Lima treatment.
Yeah, and it's definitely like the... It's not a perfect process. So like there's a lot of like, especially hands, they're all terrible in the book. They're all garbage. Like all the hands, it's just like so, like.
But I think it's the abstraction of something that's recognizable, right? That's gonna make it you.
Yeah, I'm definitely not gonna obsess in like try and make the hands perfect because it looks cool like that, you know. It's like whatever.
It gives a character.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, but it's like every time there's a hand in a painting, I'm like, oh my god, this is gonna. I do it. I'm like, yeah, it looks like trash, but whatever. I'll leave it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, whatever. What are you gonna do, right? And that's another thing, too. You just got to let it go sometimes. A lot of people obsess with, like, making it perfect. But I'd rather have it done than perfect. You know?
Yeah. That's I think you do have those two schools of thought where people are like, just put it out there and people won't see the imperfections you know are there a lot of times, right? But then you've got those people who are dedicated to that vision and, you know, those Dr. Dre's.
Yeah.
Or those Q-tips. I don't know if you ever listened to Jay Electronica, who's been supposed to release an album for... he said it's coming out in 40 days, but people have been waiting for, like, 14 years for this one album. And it's kind of like, do we even care anymore? No one cares, right? I'm sure people will to some capacity, but if it doesn't live up to the weight...
Yeah, it's like...
And it won't. It won't.
But it
just won't. Because
you,
it's like this is supposed to be life changing now. Because when we waited 5 years, we were like, this is going to be good. And what people heard or people saw sometimes is like, yeah, it is good. Let's do it. But now it's more like irritated.
Yeah, you're like, get out of here, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I mean, like, there's like a famous quote by the guy who made Super Mario, the Shigeru Miyamoto, where he's like, A bad game is like bad forever, but a delayed game is just late for a little bit and then like great after, which is like fair. I mean, you can definitely like delay something and make it perfect, but sometimes like if you just don't have the talent right now to do that, just release it as it is, you know, and then work on your craft and do it better next time, right? So he's coming from a position of like, you know, Nintendo's got almost infinite money to make a game, right? So you can just hire the people that have the talent right now to make your vision. But sometimes, like, you don't have the talent to do it right now, but it's better just to do it at the level you can and then go from there.
How hard are you on yourself when it comes to, like, your art or your craft or all that?
I don't know. I think that's why I like making comics, because, like, I'll write something, I'll be like, ah, this is garbage. But then I'll give it to an artist, and then they'll draw it. And then I'll be like, yeah, this is pretty good. You know what I mean? Because then they put their spin on it, and then now it's like, it's not just me, so I'm like, oh, okay, now it's like good. You know what I mean? So I guess, I don't know. I think I'm maybe pretty hard on myself, but at the same time, I can let things go too. So.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
It's a fair balance. Do you make the comics that you like to read?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part. I mean, there's some like comics I was hired to make where I'm like, I don't care about this. but for the most part, yeah, like, because I spend so much time on a comic, like, I'm not going to make a book that I think is just going to sell well, you know what I mean? Like, I can't, because then it's boring, and then I'm like, ah, this sucks. So.
Because your books have a lot of detail. Obviously, in your story, there's a lot of things happening that, but you're very, I guess would say generous with the storytelling space, because you don't put a lot of words.
Yeah, that's something I'm struggling with right now in Undergrowth. It's like I'm like, yo, these issues are getting so long, man. Like, each issue is like, there's one issue that's like almost 40 pages. And I'm like, man, like, come on. Just like, I'm trying to, like, in my head, I'm like, oh, I should just end it. But I'm like, but I can't just end it because, like, you have to, you know, see it through. So it gets, especially like when you're paying an artist and stuff, you're like, all right, man, each page is costing me, like, you know.
So are they making it longer?
No, it's me. Like, as I'm writing it, like, the way I'm, like, envisioning it and the way I, like, want it to spread it out and stuff. And I'm just like, oh, it's costing me a lot of money, man. But I just can't, you know, I wouldn't feel good to, like, cut it unnaturally, right? So, like, Undergrowth was originally supposed to be 6 issues. Now it's 8. You know, I was like, jeez.
But it took on a life of its own.
Yeah, it definitely, like, changed as it went, so.
What have you learned about these characters as you've been, because in one of those issues, I think it was issue 2 or 3, you said, I think it was issue 3, where that postscript that you put there,
yeah.
where you talk about, like, you're getting to know these characters now, and what you once thought you wanted this book to be, it can't just be that, because
exactly, the
characters are you're learning things about them. So describe that a little bit. What happens?
Yeah, I guess, like, as you write it, you like start thinking, like, yo, why did this happen? Like, why is this character like that? And then you start thinking about, like, their history and stuff, and then you're like, oh, that's pretty cool. Like, I want to see that, you know what I mean? So then you start putting that into the book.
Now, with that history, is that something that you decided when you were putting the story to you? Like, this person is going to come from this type of... It was just like, oh, that person's that.
These characters in Undergrowth was, like, I came up with, you know, their general kind of characteristics and stuff. And then as I was writing it, just, like, I was like, okay, why are they like that? You know what I mean? And then their backstory kind of evolves from there. And then, so there's a lot of flashbacks in Undergrowth, and I think that's because of the way that, you know, those ideas would come to me. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, we'll put that in, you know. So I'm sure if I had known that all the way throughout the whole process, maybe there'd be less flashbacks. Who knows? But for the most part, it's like that. So if you ever see flashbacks in a movie, maybe it's because the writer thought of something as he was writing.
Has there been flashbacks in the first 3 issues? Are they coming? Because I feel like so far things have been forward.
Spoiler alert! Yeah, issue 4 is like pretty much a whole flashback. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, issue 1 and 1 to 3 didn't have any flashbacks.
You're giving us a taste of the future. No, I'm making sure. Like,
and then because, like, yeah, and then 5 and 6. So issue 4, 5, and 6 are pretty much all flashbacks.
Context. A lot of, like, history.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I never even thought of that. Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's interesting, yeah.
Because I think I do, when, even in your postscript, when you were talking about how the storytelling was starting to make you feel, I felt like there was something you knew that we hadn't been informed of yet.
Totally.
And I was thinking, I missed something as I read through this. Because the book so far is very action-heavy. It's very forward motion constantly. Yeah. So and you don't... The pages are very decompressed, where you get through pages fast.
Oh, so fast.
What I meant before, is you really let the artist flesh out whatever he wants to draw. And you don't feel like, I gotta say something here. I gotta make sure that there's dialogue on my end.
Yeah, that's always so annoying, right? And also, too, like, with the letters that pay him by per page. So some pages will have, like, one word on it. I'm like, yo, I just paid the same price for that page that I did the other page. I was like, oh, man. So sometimes I'm like,
get the most for your money.
I know, right? I'm like, man, I should just put in, like, a whole bunch of words for no reason.
Sound effects.
Yeah, exactly. But no, man, you gotta make do what's good for the story, you know? And, like, the artist, Daniele, he works in, like, I think he went to school for comics, so he knows, like, what he's doing, right?
Mm.
So I want to showcase that.
So you're from the sounds of it, you're much more excited about the book.
Yeah.
Seeing that you've extended it to make the story be fleshed out, and you've added aspects of what these characters are and their histories that maybe
and super secret, your viewers are not going to be able to see this, but I'm going to show you anyways.
Can we post it?
No.
Okay.
No, you cannot.
So this is just for my eyes. This is for you. I'm always jealous when I listen to podcasts.
Okay, you can like flip through that. These are like colored pages. Right? Oh, you're sideways. Right? Look at that. That's going to be sick.
So, this is the first issue.
Yeah, that's the first issue.
This is gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I'm not just saying that. I think
you viewers at home, you won't be able to see this yet. But yeah, right? They look so sweet.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, I think that's it.
When is that coming out?
I don't know. The idea was always to just do a trade colored. So everything would be black and white, and then when we do the trade, it'd be colored.
That's gonna look amazing.
Yeah,
I gotta say, like, the black and white has a cool aesthetic, but it sometimes can be hard
exactly right,
to distinguish
what's
happening.
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, like in the beginning of issue 3, there's a lot going on, and it's kind of hard to like pick out what's going on. But the colorist is really smart, and she's like, she thinks about the like what's going on a lot, like more than me, man. Like some things she did, I was like, she's like, oh, I did it because of this and this. I was like, well, I didn't even think of that. But all right, cool.
It helps you appreciate, too, I guess, the role of a colorist.
Yeah.
Because we're so used to writer, penciler, and maybe inker when we think of comic books.
Yeah, the colorist, like, does so much.
Yeah.
And I didn't even realize that until she started doing stuff. And I was like, yo, I didn't even pick up on this detail, you know what I mean? And then she, like, highlights certain things that I didn't even think of. And so she's really good.
That's awesome. What's her name?
Yulia, or it might be, I met her online, so I don't, it's spelled like Y-U-L-I-I-A, so I think in certain languages Y or J, so it might be Julia, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not 100% sure.
And who are the cover artists coming up for the book?
Yeah, well, it's a bunch of different cover artists all the time, so... Katie Sawatsky did issue 2, and then Matthew Allison Cancor on Instagram, he did issue 3, and that was like, he's probably like the biggest guy that got to work on this book so far. He's like, he was pretty good, and it was weird because when he did it and posted about it, I got like 30 followers on Instagram just from him like posting about it, and I was like, yo, what, this is crazy. And it's like people who are into comics. I was like, I didn't even know these people existed. I mean, obviously they existed. But it's weird that these people are, like, following me, and they don't know who I am or anything just because of comic. It's, like, pretty cool.
That's cool. No, the covers have been really, really good choices.
Yeah.
And even though they don't have the, like, it's different for each one, the effects and the colors on those covers are very eye-popping.
For sure, yeah. And it's, you know, that's like, I really like getting different artists to work on a book because it's like you get cool, like, interpretations of characters and different, like, views of it and stuff. So,
yeah.
I'm really into that. Let me show you another thing.
This
is for issue 6.
Can we post that?
No.
When's issue 4 coming out? Will it be ready for Toronto Comic Con?
No, it'll probably be ready a little bit after that.
TCAF?
Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
Okay. For those of you listening and you hear these dates or these events, Toronto Comic Con is the 19th to, or the 20th to 22nd of March this year.
Yeah.
So, Metro Toronto Convention Center, you're going to have the Comic Con, Toronto Comic Con there. Come see Ricky, he'll be there.
So this is issue six.
Okay.
And so that's like with the cover.
The font of the Undergrowth title. I really think it's cool.
You like that?
Yeah, it's...
It's really in your face and obnoxious.
But no, but right. it's it's branded well.
Yeah.
And as much as you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, comic books are all about that.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and I think of not that it's the same, not to compare one to the other, but I strictly picked up Paper Girls... because those covers just kept attracting me. Like, I'm like, that book just looks cool.
yeah, it's right? Like branded well.
It was very well branded, and I think that has that same effect that the experience I had with Paper Girls. I look at that, even though I have a copy of Undergrowth number one when we were in the Snail, and we put it on the rack. It looked, it did look nicer than the other stuff that people had there.
Yeah, that's true.
It's branded well.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you.
So, so the response from like stores when they purchase a batch of them, how did how did they respond to it? Do they tell you, like, or no, they just be like, yeah, all right, well,
let me. I'll let you know a secret. Colton, do you know Colton?
No.
So this guy Colton, he's the one who's been giving it to the stores. Because I'm so, like, lazy. And, like, I guess it's a combination of lazy and, like, I don't live in Toronto. And, like, I don't know. I'm, like, I guess I'm, like, nervous to give them the stories and stuff. But Colton just takes the books and brings them. And they're like, yeah, yeah, let's buy them. And then they'll buy them. And then he gets a cut of it. And then I get a cut. And it's, like, it's pretty sweet. So I don't know what the stores are thinking about when they get the book. But he seems to be, he seems to think they're doing good. And they seem to sell for the most part. Like, I mean, Undergrowth was like buried under all those other indie
comics. Now that you, I mean, we all kind of know why comic books have certain titles in order for their positioning. Would you ever reconsider what you would name your book to, in order for it to have placement in the middle? Is that why Millennium Bomb was with an N?
I wouldn't consider that at all. Like, even the placement of the text, like, a lot of people are like, oh, you gotta put it on the top because the way comic racks are, they have like a piece at the bottom cover it. But whatever, I don't care. Like, Itchy 2's got the text at the bottom. It's like, who cares, man? Like, you know, people are gonna pick it up no matter what. Hopefully.
No, I think they will.
And like, I'm not gonna sacrifice like the design and aesthetic of a book just for a shelf, you know? Like, that's ridiculous. Because, like, someone's going to buy it and take it home.
It's yours, though, right? It's your baby.
Exactly.
It's not, this isn't a big two or a corporate entity that's like, we need you to move this many books in order for it to exist. Like, so this book exists because I say it does.
Exactly. Right. So that's, like, what you want to do. So you're going to do it your way, too.
Right.
And that's why, like, even, maybe that's why I'm a little nervous to get it published, too, because, like, I'm worried that a publisher would come in and be like, oh, we gotta change this. And it's like, in the book, there's like that kid who's smoking, and though we never say like their age, and I'd imagine she's like, you know, like 15, 16, right? And she's like smoking, so that's kind of weird. And like, I feel like a publisher might be like, we gotta cut that out. But it's like integral to who the character is.
Yeah, of course.
So
I think that's a question I have for you. We were talking about a lot of stuff tonight, but as a creator, do you ever feel like I have to make sure that this is included, or I have this character that is representative to, do you ever feel like you have to do that, or do you let your story and artistic vision be what it is?
Yeah, like, I'll definitely let the artistic vision be what it is, but I think that within that, there's like interesting characters that can be found outside of what's normal, you know, or what is like, you know, traditional. So, like, with Happily Ever After, I was like, all right, the princess gets kidnapped, uses a dating app. I'm like, okay. So naturally, you'd be like, okay, well, it's a prince kidnapped the princess, right? But then, you know, that story's been told a million times. So then you start to think, okay, how can you change it a little bit? It's like, all right, she's kidnapped by another princess. So now all of a sudden, people are like, oh, you're just doing LGBT inclusiveness, right? Like, this is, you're just, like, catering to your audience. But it's like, that's not the case, because you're just like trying to think of ways around the traditional tropes and like ways to change it, right? So it's not necessarily that, you know, that character had to be in it, but,
well, you took a prototypical story that we all kind of know, and you turned it on its head.
Right.
It's different. Turn the trope on its head and say, how am I going to solve this problem?
Yeah, and it's not necessarily that, you know, that character had to be in it because it's like, you know, inclusive or whatever. It's just like, that is the way that the story is now going to be told, you know what I mean? So,
yeah, but when you have your story that you want to tell, like, you don't say, well, okay, that's checked off the list, that's checked off the list.
No, that would be crappy, and that would suck. And then you'd write some boring characters, man, you know?
Yeah. No, you think about these things because you know that the audiences today are so vast, and a lot of people might only support something if that thing that they're looking for, you know, like, I even have friends who are like, I'm not going to watch that movie. And I'm like, why? It's right. one of nominated for Oscar. They're like, ah, it's only white guys in it, like referring to the Irishman.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like some people feel that way.
And I mean, I think that's totally fine. Like, if you don't want to see a bunch of white guys on screen talking, like, fine, that's cool. You know? And that's why, like, I think it was Chris Butcher who, like, runs TCAF and stuff. I saw him. He was talking about how so many people want, you know, diversity and inclusion and all this different stuff in Marvel and DC, but then they fail to recognize that that stuff is happening just outside of Marvel DC, and that needs support versus changing Marvel and DC. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not. So
I, yeah, that's
you shouldn't
true.
Really. You shouldn't really like look. Marvel DC is going to do what they do, right? And they're gonna follow the dollar no matter what. So you need to show them that that is where the money is in this specific thing. And then you have creators out there who are struggling because no one wants to read their stuff, but they're creating what you want. So you need to support that. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly because I don't think the problem. If Captain America's sales drop, it's not because him and Bucky aren't in a relationship.
Right.
Because that story should be told in a new character. Like, somebody should create that character instead of saying, well, this is what has to happen with Cap in order for him to matter. Because, like you said, someone's making that story.
Yeah.
They're making an original version of
that. Yeah, that story is happening.
It's happening
somewhere
there.
Else.
Like, go find that one.
Exactly.
Because someone's making it. You don't got to, like you said, you don't got to change what already exists in order for this situation.
And I mean, I'm totally fine with changing things just like story-wise, like make it exciting by changing things, like that's fine. But yeah, like I think to exclusively be like, well, this is what I want and I want Captain America to do that. And you're like, okay, well, write your own Captain America story, you know? Like geez, man, like what do you want from me?
Yeah, so. No, it's true. And I think because the reaction sometimes you get from that becomes, again, that same blow. Like, the blowback you get from one end, you're going to get it from another end.
Yeah,
and that's why it's good to create that thing whole cloth sometimes.
Yeah.
To be like, that. No, this is who the character is.
Right,
and
exactly.
If you're looking for that, here, this is brand new, it's yours.
Yeah, and right? And then people need to support that, and then companies like, whoa, that's making a lot of money. We need some of that money. So then,
yeah, let's make sure.
At the end of the day, it's kind of shitty when a company does stuff just for money, but whatever.
Yeah,
what are you gonna do, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So
what are you doing these days for Ricky to relax and decompress when you're not working and writing comics and making books?
Nothing, man.
Like, nothing?
There's no off switch at this point.
It's all creating.
Yeah, and it's, which, like, every day I'm like, man, I should, like, not do that. Like, I recognize how destructive that can be, you know what I mean? But
so you got no TV shows that you're following?
What else?
No movies
nothing,
that you're watching?
I'm not doing anything. I'm just,
you're just like, trying to write.
I'll sit there and I'll be like, I'm not doing nothing right now. I should be doing something.
That's not true. Because you know what? When when I'm not creating something or you know, finding out another thing to podcast or something to read to keep on, and I'm watching the next season of a show, I'm just like, I'm just watching TV. There's that balance.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Well, I don't even watch TV, man. I don't have cable. So
Netflix on the tablet?
I don't have Netflix, no. I watch a lot of YouTube, which is, like, kind of dumb, but like cooking videos, I watch a lot of those.
Hey, man, whatever is your thing.
Yeah, like, a lot of, like, just, like, musicians in studios playing songs. Which, like, I don't know, it's like, kind of crappy, I guess.
Why is that crappy? That's not crappy. That's your thing.
Yeah, but, yeah, I was like, could be doing something else. So, and it's weird, man. Like, I feel like if I'm not doing anything, then I'm not, like, progressing. So it's like it's
in regards kinda, to creating.
Yeah. So it's
that's
pretty,
fair. That's true, though.
Yeah. But it's definitely, like, pretty toxic. You can't live a life like that. You know what I mean? And, like, I feel it sometimes, like, even at work. You know, like, I'll see someone like not necessarily like, relaxing because they're at work, but, you know, taking it easy, and I'm like, you son of a gun, like, we got stuff to do, you know what I mean? So I, like, I don't want to be that guy who, like, is, like, working all the time and pressuring everyone else to work all the time, but at the same time, like, when I'm not working, I feel like I'm, like, wasting my time, It's like over Christmas, oh man, I didn't do nothing at all, and like I felt like crap.
You know? I mean, creating,
or just in general, like I was just hanging out and just sitting around. Yeah, like I didn't like that too much.
It felt like that's what gets you down.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that's, I don't think that's toxic necessarily, because you're, you know where you, you feel best.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's okay. If you feel stuff. If you feel that sense of satisfaction creating, you need to create.
No, that's true.
No one could criticize
you.
You
don't
want
to, like, I don't know. And then, yeah, I guess that's a good point. Like, you don't, like, now it's like it's stressful to relax because you're like, I should be relaxing. So like, you sit there and you're like, am I relaxing yet? You know what I mean? So yeah, I guess that's what, you just gotta live your life, you know.
Sometimes if you get to the point where creating something is relaxing,
yeah,
that's important too, yeah, right? But I don't think you should, one, you shouldn't be upset at yourself because you didn't fill this quota that, that you're putting your burden under yourself to do. Because when it's time to do it, you're going to do it. And that's why I think giving yourself deadlines and things to, like, by this time this should be done, you'll get it done.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean,
but your work, you've made a goal. Like, by this time, Millennium Bomb should be done. And by this day, I'll have issue 4 of Undergrowth.
But then, I don't know, like, you don't see anyone because you're, like, always working. And because I live in Brampton, it's, like, harder to stay. Yeah. You know, like, people always be like, yo, you want to hang out? I'd be like, nah, I can't. You know what I mean? And so then you start to isolate yourself, you know what I mean? And then you don't talk to anyone, or you don't, like, hang out with people. And, you know, it gets tough, but at the same time, like, you got to get it done, you know?
Do you find socialization, like hanging out and going to parties or big groups, does it energize you, or does it?
It depends. Like, stuff like Comic Con is definitely, like, by the end, I'm like, yeah, I'm like amped to, like, do stuff. But I don't know, like, just like a hanging out at a bar with, like, a bunch of people, it doesn't really, like, do anything for me, because, like, I don't know. I'll just, like, I like talking, like, one-on-one with people. So
yeah, me too.
Yeah, so, like, being at a bar and, like, having to, like, party with all these people, I'm like, like, you know,
I'm the same.
Kinda shitty.
It's kind of something. Wasn't always like that, but as I've gotten older, I'm more like, I want to be with people, but I want to give, like, Ricky.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to have a conversation with him one on one, and or even like a small, like, you know, if there was Shane and Martin and
you know, small group,
four of us, we can all get our voice in, we can all speak, laugh, tell jokes. But then when you have these big, huge to-dos, people get excited, and that's fine. Some people love that. For me, I gives me a certain level of anxiety sometimes.
Yeah, and if you have to, like, scream to talk to someone, you're like, yo, I don't want to do that.
The raid party this year was real cool. I would definitely go again. But when I wanted to talk, like, what'd you say?
Yeah, right. You're like screaming.
Like, I really want to talk to you because you're cool, but it's I tough. Can't hear you. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So you had I don't know if it's something you could talk about yet, but you mentioned it to me, a possible podcast that you wanted to do, or is that still?
I mean, that's like, you know, ideas keep popping up, but this is like how do I explain it? It was Enter the Dragon meets 8 Mile in space. So that'd be cool. Like, it's where it's like, you know, like rap battles, but it's the sci-fi rap battles, and there's like a small little story. So it'd be like a scripted podcast kind of thing, where it's like, or a radio play or whatever, where it like follows one guy going through this like tournament of rap battles in space. And then you'd get like different rappers to be like the different characters that he fights and stuff. So, and then he solves like some mystery or something. So
how many episodes did you want it to be?
I haven't thought it would be on that idea.
Beyond that. But it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think it'd be really fun. And then you could like release a small little book of maybe like the lyrics that everyone, like all the verses and stuff, and then get like a kind of almost like a graffiti artist to like design the pages.
So would you have your character, like, here's my main character that is going to win, like, he's going to be the victor.
Yeah.
But what if the different rappers that you have writes of, like, actually, he killed you. You're out. The story is really about this guy.
Maybe, yeah, who knows? I'll just have to tell him. I'll be like, can you, like, tone it down a little bit?
You just destroy them.
So, like, what would your character be in this story? Like, what would your... Because you're obviously going to be in it, because you're, like, a sick rapper. Oh. So, like, what's, like, your character?
Would I be the main character, or would I be cannon fodder?
Yeah, you'd be cannon fodder.
So you've got somebody that lined up.
I think, like, Word Burglar could be really good as, like, the main character.
Oh, do you know him?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I mentioned very briefly to him, and he was like, I don't know, sure. So, I mean, he probably didn't even remember that, but...
He's never listened. I've seen him perform on the street.
He's good.
He's more of a freestyle guy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's good with freestyles, yeah.
Do you like... what kind of... For me,
you're avoiding the question here.
Who would I be?
What would your alien character be?
I don't know. I
would you be like humanoid or like really like out there?
I'd be humanoid.
Yeah. Okay.
I wouldn't mind being a different color.
Okay.
Or you know, having some sort of physical feature that is distinctly alien.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be humanoid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Arm, leg, or arm. Yeah,
single arm.
No. Yeah, arm, leg, arm, head. That's
okay.
Good.
All right, okay. Anyway, sorry, what was your original question?
I forgot now. Oh, for you, when it comes to... Because you're a hip-hop fan. You like music in general, but some people were really into the ability of freestyle.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that, like, the shtick that you're like, that's what it's all about?
No, I mean, I can appreciate it, but I think, like... When it comes to musicality, I think that's more important for me. Like the rhythm and like even some like clever lines and stuff. And you get that in rap battles too, in like freestyles. But it's never as good as when you sit down and like really write it and stuff. So as much as I respect freestyles and like stuff like that, it's never gonna be as good as like a written,
yeah,
a good written rap.
Yeah, I definitely admire the ability of people, yeah, who can go off the top of their head and rhyme.
Yeah.
But I never really rank a great freestyler in the same way that I would rank a guy who can't freestyle, but he writes amazing songs.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll always put that above it.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I think RZA is, like, my favorite rapper.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's just like his flow is like so good. I love it.
I like him. He's very distinct.
Yeah.
He's kind of quirky. He says sometimes some really weird stuff, but there's a lot of meaning to it too, if you know.
And like he's a musical rapper, you know, like him and like Old Dirty Bastard, like the way they rap is like they're almost like...
I never liked Old Dirty Bastard, but I like him. I appreciate him much more now.
Yeah.
My tastes at certain eras were... I was just... What did they say?
Yeah.
How
yeah.
dope was what they said and how they said it?
Exactly, right?
And how lyrical were they?
Yeah.
And like, this guy's not... You know, Dirty Bastard's not lyrical the way I want him to be. But now it's like he's like a jazz musician.
Yeah, exactly, right? So it's weird.
But it's not... Yeah, what he does is so... Like you said, the musicality of it.
Yeah.
It's in a place that
different,
you can't duplicate that or describe it. It's very unique.
Yeah. And then like you got guys like, you know, Ghostface Killah, that's like more into the rhythm than he is into the musicality of it, you know what I mean? So then that's really cool too. Basically everyone at Wu-Tang is like the best. It's like a super group of like rap.
Yeah, they're
every
very
single
special.
One of them is so
they're very
good.
Special.
It's
yeah.
crazy.
Who's your favorite of them? RZA.
RZA,
yeah, you said that.
But then probably Method Man after that.
Yeah?
Yeah. Or maybe even Ghostface. They're all the... Maybe Method Man and Ghostface are like around the same level.
That chunk of 93 until... I would say Supreme Clientele from Ghostface.
Yes.
Those albums... All their debut albums, Liquid Swords, The Iron Man, The Purple Tape, Only Built for Cuba, like, incredible albums.
Yeah.
And then not even mentioning the 36 Chambers. So good.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I don't know how they did it, but...
Did you see that barbershop that they have in Toronto? Raekwon's barbershop and, like, it's like the Wu-Tang Museum. It's the only one.
Oh, really?
It's in Toronto.
Oh, weird.
And it's all dedicated to Wu-Tang and the Only Built for Cuban Links. She will get her haircut there. Get a lineup for the beard just before Comic-Con.
There you go. Sweet.
Oh, man.
Right. Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see if that project ever comes to light. I mean...
Well, if it does, I'll lend a hand for cannon fodder.
All right.
I can be whack.
Yeah. It's tough, too, because, like, I have all these ideas for, like, you know, stuff. And... I feel like I'm in a position right now, like, I'm living at home, I have a full-time job, where I feel like, alright, I can, like, put in some money into all these things, right? But at the same time, it's like, I should move out and, like, live a life, you know what I mean? So right now I'm trapped between, you know, living at home and making comics and making stuff, or moving out and not doing anything. So I'd rather, like, live at home at this point.
What are you happy to do?
I don't know. Well, I guess making the comics, but...
The comics. Because that level of happiness is what you're putting out there in the world.
Yeah,
whereas if you're not doing that thing that truly makes you happy just so that you're out and having what everyone else deems your life should be...
That's a good point.
You know, you won't be at Comic-Con. You won't be giving that energy that you're giving.
Yeah,
and that's what we need from you.
But I definitely feel like... I should, like, move out, though, like...
But you will.
I don't know, will I, man? I don't know.
But if you don't, and what? What are people going to say? Oh, you're still living at home. What are you making up? So what?
Yeah.
So what?
Exactly.
But so what?
No, that's true. I shouldn't, like, worried what other people think.
You work a full-time job.
Yeah.
And when you're not working a full-time job, you're creating.
Comics, yeah.
So you're not a person who's doing nothing living at home.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the difference. A lot of people live at home is because they don't have money to go live outside. They don't do it. Yeah. That's not the case.
Yeah, that's true.
So you got to look at actual... So could you move out? Yeah, you could.
Yeah. All right, bye. You convinced me.
I twisted your arm. Stay at
I'm
home
not so much a slacker. Yeah, it's like.
I mean, if moving out would make you happier and give you a sense of freedom or whatever,
probably not. Man.
Okay, so don't do the thing that everyone else expects you to do because they couldn't live your life.
Oh shit. True. They're just jealous.
No, well, you know what I noticed myself, like, a lot of times the things that people can't handle is usually, like, they couldn't handle that reality for themselves.
Right.
The things that they're saying, like, no, you'd be really good at this and and then you oftentimes start to take in, man, all my friends bought a house, all my friends got married, all my friends have kids.
Yeah,
that's true. But that's what they want.
Yeah.
I'm only wanting that because I think I should.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know? And then you realize, like, they couldn't live that life without it. But I can. I don't really want their life. I just want their life because they couldn't... I'm not saying it right, but it's like they couldn't live with themselves if they didn't have that.
Yeah.
And sometimes they push that on you.
That's true.
Right?
Was it like Jay-Z was saying, like, his dad was saying that he can't be a rapper, it's unreasonable, but
his
it's
uncle,
like, for him,
uncle,
it's unreasonable,
yeah.
But for Jay-Z, it's like, I can do that, right?
So, yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And some people, you know, they say, you gotta be that rapper, you gotta do that thing, you're wasting it. It's like, no, sometimes we're putting our idea of who that person should be, so it would make us feel better if they were that thing.
That's true.
Right? So...
Alright, I'll keep making comics then, yes.
If this is where Ricky Lima's happy place
oh,
is,
man.
Be at home in Brampton.
But then, yeah, that's true.
Unless you don't want to live in Brampton.
Whatever. I mean, what am I doing in Brampton? Just making comics, right? So it's not like I'm going out and partying. So it doesn't matter. I could be, like, living in Alaska doing this, you know? That'd be sick.
That would be
Alaska
sick.
Alaska doing it.
Well, the theme of this podcast should be being happy making comics.
There you go.
With Ricky Lee. All
right, sweet. And I definitely am. Like, every time I get new pages from the artist, I'm like, it, like, reinvigorates, like, me writing comics and stuff. And, like, going home in the, because I basically, when I come back from work, I'll, like, go to a coffee shop and write and stuff. So that's usually, like, pretty much every day. Unless the Raptors are playing, then I'll just watch that.
They're so good.
Yeah, they're great.
They're so good.
It's, like, so good. Like, even on and off the court, it's, like, crazy. Like, there's so much fun just to, like, follow, man.
I'm so happy for them because I was really on a downer when Kawhi left. Yeah. Like, our last conversation, we talked about that, right? And it just felt like, the team's disrespected, and now they're not going to stand a chance. Yeah, yeah. It's like, were wrong. I'm very happy that I was wrong.
Yeah, exactly, right? So it's good. And that's inspiring, too, because now you're like, oh, yeah, well, they could do it. Why can't I, you know?
Absolutely.
So,
you know what? Creative people can't not be creative. Like, you have to you have to scratch that itch.
Yeah.
Because you feel the worst with yourself when you don't do it.
Yeah, totally.
And I'm not anywhere near creative the way some of my friends are, such as yourself or, you know, Shane and all you guys. But when I haven't written something or recorded something or have, like, a body of some sort of work that is going to be something, I'm like, something's bothering me and I don't know what it is. And it's because, like, you know what? You've been a lazy bum and you've wasted time when you really want to do something, but you're not because of some sort of thing holding you back. But nothing feels better than when you actually
do it.
When you do it and you hear it back or you look at it, like, you get those pictures and you feel great.
Yeah, yeah, right? And it's like, it makes it all worthwhile. So
don't stop.
Oh, man. I won't now. Jeez. No.
A little bit more lighter under the butt.
Man, but it definitely, like I say, it gets lonely because you, like, you know, you focus on it so much and then you kind of ignore all the other stuff.
So,
like, there's 100% things in my life I'm ignoring right now that need to be dealt with that I'm not dealing with because I'm ranking comics, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what are you going to do, right?
But that's something that you need to, at your time, reflect on and do it.
Yeah.
You will.
Who knows, man? Maybe I'll just keep making comments.
Maybe just keep making comments. And if you ever need to talk about it, you just call Eric. And you say, hey, we gotta do a podcast.
Exactly. But, I don't know. It's crazy, man. Because, like, you can definitely, like, just ignore everything in life and just focus on, like, you know, work. And then...
But you don't want to do that either. You gotta make sure that you do press that refresh button. Because you do need it. You do need it.
Where's that refresh button, man? I can't find it.
You have to go to a beach somewhere.
Oh, man.
And just read comics.
Alright.
And listen to the water crash and have a couple drinks. And you'll be like, alright, I needed that. Now I can go back and I put fuel in the tank.
Yeah.
Because burnout happens. Maybe, too.
For sure, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've seen it happen with people. And, like, sometimes I get worried that I'm going to be burnt out, but I don't know. I just keep going anyway. So who knows? Maybe I'm, like, totally burnt out.
We'll let you know, Ricky. We'll let you know when you're burnt out.
And, like, I mean, some days are harder than others, right? Like, you know. Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. The other day at work, like, there's a super small mistake that was my fault. And, like, I just, like, I was like, I can't deal with this, man. like holy shit. Like, it felt so bad, but it wasn't a big deal, right? But I guess, like, as things, like, build up and as you start thinking about stuff, it's, like, even the small stuff start to become an issue.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's when you know you got to reassess.
Exactly, right? But whatever.
You're doing good. All right. Well, that's our cue. The store, the cafe is closing down. Well, thanks, Ricky. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I love hanging out with you. I love our conversation. It's been a good one. I'm looking forward to Millennium Bomb and Undergrowth 4, 5, all the way up to 8.
Me too.
For the world to see it.
Me too.
We got to do this more often, dude.
Yes, totally.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. This is Eric Anthony and Ricky Lima. You can you follow Ricky Lima on King K Rule, right?
King.K.Rule.
Okay. And on Facebook. And you can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook and like the show on iTunes and leave a review because it does help. And stay tuned for more episodes because we got more stuff coming your way. This is Eric Anthony and the Portuguese Prince.
Yeah, that's right.
Signing off. Take care, everybody.